Coming up on the Social Hour, is Apple going to kill Pandora? Or maybe buy it? App.net's first month has some interesting statistics. Amazon's Silk browser wants to track you and how to manage your brand. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 77, recorded Friday, September 7th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford. Ford invites us tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. We're on episode 77, which is a palindrome episode, which means it's going to be great. From Petaluma, World Twit Headquarters, I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Sarah. Yes, the big 77. That's a lucky number.
I think so. Yeah, it's twice as lucky as just 1-7.
I cannot believe.
Yeah,
we're at that. It's at 77. It's crazy.
It seems like we just started the Social Hour. We did start it last year. I mean, it hasn't been that long, but when you think of it in terms of, 77 episodes, we're coming up on 100 at this point. There's a lot of episodes under our belt. So happy 77 to you. Quickly, for anybody who's watching us live, we're recording at a kind of a weird time. Usually we're 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. We're actually shooting next week's episode a week ahead of time because Amber and I are both going to be somewhat out of commission next Friday. But if you're watching it after the fact, shouldn't affect you at all. The show's coming out on September 14th, as usual, 1 week afterwards. The only thing is that the stories that we're talking about are very, very timely as of today, as of September 7th. So if anything does break between now and then, we will absolutely cover it next week. Until then, it's just a regular show, and hopefully for anybody watching us live, it's twice as fun.
And I think we have a lot of stories, too, that will stand the test of time, if I can say that, Sarah. We chose wisely this week, so it won't be too outdated. First up, a big story about Apple in talks to possibly create a Pandora rival. Now, this isn't a rumor that's been floating around the web. Unfortunately, it's had a pretty big impact on Pandora and the price of their stock, which is down, I think, about 18% based on some of these rumors.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is a Wall Street Journal article. Wall Street Journal has unnamed sources that are familiar with the matter. Then again, All Things D says, well, we've got some sources too. They're not the same sources as the Wall Street Journal who are agreeing that this is actually happening. So based on track record of both company sources, this appears to be a pretty solid rumor. We'll take it at that. The idea is that Pandora, of course, is internet radio model, where you pick an artist or a genre of a type of music, and Pandora will create a station around that artist. Now, because of the music licensing model, you can't say to Pandora, okay, well, I love Lady Gaga and I just want to hear Born This Way, like, as much as possible. And then, you know, other Lady Gaga stuff. It doesn't really work that way. The licenses aren't that specific. It's kind of how they can create the licenses that they have. You get, Lady Gaga music and other artists that are like Lady Gaga. And what's nice about Pandora, and I'm just explaining for, you know, maybe those of you who watch or listen to the show who don't have access to Pandora, because I figure most of you who have access have at least tried it, so you understand how it works. You can like or dislike a certain song, and Pandora gets smarter over time with this specific artist station that you create. So For people who really like to cultivate certain types of music, depending on their mood, I've got all sorts of artist stations in my Pandora account. It's great. But again, it's not specific. It's not like the iTunes model where you just buy that Lady Gaga album that you love and you can listen to that as many times as you like and it belongs to you. No Pandora music belongs to you. You can't download anything. They provide links to buy the music, but that's not through Pandora. The idea that Apple would create the Pandora model within iTunes itself or some, you know, app that would be closely linked to iTunes seems like a really good idea because Pandora is extremely popular. You know, it doesn't really make any money because there's a whole royalty model that's kind of screwed up. It has to pay out more royalty money than it's actually pulling in because it is ad supported. But it's popular. I mean, I think it has about 60 million active users, more so than other competitors that have tried Pandora, like radio stations. Spotify comes to mind. Apple has many more, at least registered users on iTunes. Why wouldn't they at least offer something that's an alternative to actually buying music, which is has been a very successful model for them on iTunes, but isn't necessarily what people consider the future of music?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think this makes a lot of sense for Apple as far as allowing people to discover new music. I do think at the end of the day, it's unfortunate for Pandora. I mean, we've followed Pandora for many years as far as watching them in their early days when they first launched and to see them have, like you said, almost 60 million users and people absolutely love the service. I'd hate to see them get impacted in a negative way. But of course, Apple is such a large company. You know, they're the giant in the room. And the reality is, I think Pandora would have a hard time continuing to thrive if Apple came in and got a big hold on the market, especially with so many iTunes users. So I'm sure Pandora is not thrilled about this. And oftentimes, I think with Apple rumors, Sarah, as we've seen many times, they are true.
Many times they are true. We actually talked about this on Tech News Today last week. And Tom brought up the question, why wouldn't Apple just buy Pandora? I mean, they've got the cash. They could absolutely afford Pandora. Then they already have all these Pandora users who may not already be iTunes users. Some people might be, you know, like Pandora because it's an alternative to iTunes. So you get more users over. Apple has their own iAd advertising space so that they, you know, there's a revenue stream already built into this. And then they could possibly, because Apple has a good relationship with these music companies, these music labels, they're used to negotiating with these companies, get better licensing agreements. So you could say something like, all right, well, it's going to be an artist station, but instead of Sarah not being able to pick that Lady Gaga song that she really, really likes, we're actually going to be able to give that to her. We could guarantee that she would hear it every 2 hours or, you know, every day. That, you know, she starts up a new session, she has a little bit more control over what she hears. So it's like Pandora, but a little bit better. Mm. Now I don't know if that's going on. This was absolutely just speculative on our part. I have no information that leads me to believe that they are talking. But I bet they have. I bet that Apple has thought about either, do we buy someone like Pandora? Does Pandora want to be bought? Is that a mess? Do we inherit royalty issues that we don't want? Or does it make more sense for us to compete with Pandora because we think that we could do what they do better and people will jump ship? I'm not sure what the answer is, but it seems at least for now something that we can expect from Apple because they do want to offer people more than just the option to buy songs for 99 cents or you know, albums for $10.
Yeah, and I think the advantage that Apple has, obviously, is they have the worldwide market really cornered. And that's something that Pandora has always struggled with because they're only able to serve the U.S. market. So when you're talking about those almost 60 million users, they're all based in the U.S. because of royalty issues and not being able to get deals with other countries. It just becomes too expensive. But you could see Apple come in and be able to really get a global market. And that's something that Pandora hasn't really been able to do. So the 60 million, all of a sudden, it grows astronomically as far as the number of users. So it makes sense for Apple. We'll just have to keep an eye on this story, see what happens. And hopefully somehow, if it does happen, hopefully Pandora survives.
I'm a big fan of Pandora as well. I actually have a friend who works at Pandora. And so I hear a little bit about some of the struggles that they've gone through over. A few years ago, Pandora was almost done. They almost had to completely shut down because the royalties were going to crush them. So there's a little bit of a Pandora, you know, kind of came back, little engine that could. They went public late last year. Their stock is down since their initial IPO offering. But I'm with you. I've always liked Pandora. And I also think that I have tried the radio functionality. There's I use RDO for my streaming service. I pay them a monthly fee. And they have radio stations. So if I choose the artist Lady Gaga, I can play Lady Gaga radio station from within RDO. But it doesn't have that Music Genome Project algorithm and data that Pandora has been collecting from millions of people for years that helps their model be really smart and efficient, not 100% efficient, because I know people complain sometimes you get a really wonky song in an artist station that doesn't belong there. But for the most part, it's pretty intelligent about suggesting music to you that you end up really liking. Now, I've got this electronica station on Pandora, and it's great. I mean, I really like everything that it plays me. And I've, half of those artists I had never heard of before. Again, Pandora is just, you know, it's got a lot of experience under its belt. So I'm with you. I don't want to see it go away. And if Apple, if you buy Pandora, you can't kill it. You just have to make it better somehow.
You heard
it here. We're going to be mad.
We're going to be angry. All right, Sarah. Amazon's had some big news recently when they announced a bunch of new Kindles recently. And also this news, Amazon's Silk browser now tracking user behavior for a possible Trending Now section. I don't know a lot about this, Sarah, and I'm not as familiar with the Silk web browser. So what's this all about?
Silk web browser was something that they announced for the Kindles last year, back in 2011, when we saw the first Kindle Fire. And it's sort of this cloud-accelerated mobile browser that has the idea that that Amazon touts is, you know, there's faster page loading speeds, and there's stuff that they're doing behind the scenes that makes it snappier. Basically, I mean, in a nutshell, for the end user, you think, wow, this browser is really quick because Amazon's doing some tricks behind the scene. Now, last week when Amazon announced the new models of Kindles, we've got a couple of HD Kindles. We've got even a more expensive LTE version of a Kindle HD. We even have a new e-reader. They didn't really talk about the Silk web browser at all. And last year around this time, it was a big deal. I mean, Amazon made a pretty big deal about how this web browser was just, it was going to feel so seamless, and people were, you know, going to think other browsers paled in comparison. What's interesting is that it has gotten an update. Amazon says that the pages will load even faster. They're going to have better HTML5 support, a more improved start page. But they also have a new feature area called Trending Now, which will identify which web pages are seeing spikes in traffic, even unusual amounts of traffic, which would indicate that they've got either, you know, meme-like qualities, noteworthy information. Okay, well, that sounds like something that, you know, could help us for the social hour, for example. But how do they get that information? Well, it's because the web browser is collecting information about user behavior and where people are going. So the Trending Now area is something that I'm seeing based on actual data. Amazon's not guessing. It's like it's analyzing where people are going, and it's serving that up to me. Now, this isn't personal user information. This is not Amber MacArthur went to BuzzFeed, and that's a violation of her privacy, and now I know that. However, this sort of thing tends to get people riled up, even if it's just aggregate anonymous data, because it is pulling information from your user sessions.
Very interesting.
I mean, does this scare you? Does this freak you out?
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm kind of at the point in terms of privacy, especially with using so many Google services, that sometimes you just accept that there are times when some of the information that you may consider personal does get shared in certain respects. And I don't think it's all that frightening in terms of the way that you describe it. I don't see it being as useful maybe as maybe they imagine. I don't know. That's my gut reaction when I see it.
Yeah, someone in chat room says, no, the Silk browser was already tracking people. That's actually true. I mean, one of the benefits of tracking user behavior was that the browser could identify which websites you tended to visit more often so that it could pre-cache that content. Then when you go back, it loads faster. It seems like it's loading, you know, on a dime, but that's actually based on information that you've already provided. So this is not a, oh no, Amazon is all of a sudden spying on everybody, you know, and trying to make some trending page based on that. It's the same kind of behavior that anyone who understands how Silk already works is going to be somewhat familiar with. And either you're comfortable with it or you're not. But I don't tend to, these kind of things, I go like, okay, as long as I understand what's going on, I'm not going to freak out about it.
Exactly.
But I think, and Amber, I think you and I are kind of in the same boat with that. But that's not how everyone feels. There's some people who just say, this is just unacceptable. I don't want any data of anything that I do to be available to anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think people are not so cautious, but they should be a little more cautious in terms of how their data is shared. But for anyone who uses Facebook, I think you're used to getting exploited, if I can use that word, at times. And you understand that more and more these companies have to figure out a way to take that data. That information is of value to them and to advertisers, and they're going to parse it out and they're going to use it, right? So it's just, I almost wish that the terms of service for some of these services were that much easier to read through. I think more people might get involved in it. Or maybe not. Who knows? Now, Sarah, another social network that I've been hearing a lot about recently is app.net. Although not a huge user base there, as I understand it, definitely an appealing place for developers.
Yeah. In fact, I joined app.net. I felt that it was my duty to make sure that I not only understood it, but reserved my username. So I paid the $50 annual fee. It's $100 if you want access to certain developer tools, but just to get into the service, it's an annual $50. It was a Kickstarter project. Well, it wasn't actually a Kickstarter project. It was like a Kickstarter project. It looks like a lot like it, but it was a way to have the public all contribute to a Twitter-like service that does not rely on the wishes and needs of advertisers who fund services like Twitter. Once you get into the point where you're a big company and you need to start making money, you have to start acting as such, and it upsets people. And Twitter is changing the rules, as we've seen with a lot of the Twitter API stories that have been rolling out over the last month. So that's app.net. Well, how successful is app.net? That's a really good question. I don't find it to be a place for a lot of engagement based on the people that I'm following. There aren't a lot of people following me, at least, you know, when you compare it to Twitter. And it's not a really fair comparison because, you know, when Twitter was unveiled to the world, there was nothing like Twitter. You either loved it or you hated it or it confused you or whatever, but it was new and it was exciting. And app.net is showing us a model that's supposed to be a pure model that's not going to end up upsetting people when, you know, they start taking away features and you start seeing ads. But it is a Twitter model. So I think that that's part of the issue is that, I mean, why would people be flocking to app.net? They're not annoyed with the ads on Twitter enough yet, and Twitter's where everybody is. So
yeah, I think it's going to take, you know, some pretty well-known users to start going there. I mean, that's how we saw, I think, Twitter really take off, is that more and more you heard about it in the media. And I think app.net, it's still very early days for them.
There's some folks in chat. Every time we mention app.net on any of our shows, folks in chat say $50 is just too much. I agree with you. I mean, it felt like a lot to me. And yeah, this is something that, you know, I can like, I mean, I can afford it, right? I can. But I know that there are folks who, you know, $2 app is like, well, I'll wait till it's free. $50 is just, that's just not possible for a lot of folks. A fellow named Diego Bosch wrote up on his blog recently some interesting statistics about the first month on app.net. He calls it first month on app.net, church and stats. Way to be to the point. And he's got some interesting tidbits of the usage thus far. It says 250 users have generated half of the posts. There are about 20,000 users. There's a little over 300,000 posts so far. So not that many people are posting on a regular basis. A small number of people are generating up to half of all of the content. Now, of course, this is not, although I would say it's a direct competitor to Twitter, it has some different rules. Instead of 140 characters, you have 256, for example. So you've got some more leeway to get your point across. But he says the average post length is about 100 characters. In comparison, tweets are about 70. So people are usually using about half of the characters that they're allotted on Twitter, even when you only have 140 characters, which is kind of interesting. So he says it's the same type of thing. You know, you give people 256 and they're using, you know, less than half of that. And he mentions that although there's a very high percentage of developers on app.net, which is certainly different than Twitter because everybody's on Twitter, he says even taking this into account, he thinks there's a surprising number of applications that support the service. And then he lists the top 20, IFTTT, which is If This Then That. We've talked about it on the show in the past. Buffer, Hoo-Ha, which is a Android app.net app. AppNet Rhino, which is the iOS version. I've got that downloaded. It's very nice. And so on and so forth. And then there's a little word cloud of popular words that have been talked about on app.net, not surprisingly, of course, because the last few days have been huge for Amazon and Kindle because of the new Kindle Fires that were announced. We've got this visual representation. But honestly, you know, you read all of this, and this is great. I kind of love this, like this number crunching and data and graphs that show usage. But it seems to me like it's very clear that there aren't that many people actively engaging on the service. And I don't know what they're going to do to get a bunch of new people engaged and using and fired up about it, because there's that $50 annual commitment.
Yeah, it's not as though I'm entirely opposed to paying for services. I've said before that I wouldn't mind paying for services. I pay for a lot of online services today, but I'm not sure that I would pay $50 before I even can start using something. It just seems to be a bad model to get new people coming in. I mean, you can imagine if Twitter or Facebook, when they first started, tried to charge users what I think is a pretty steep amount, I don't think anyone would jump on board. So they're going to have a really tough time building up that community of people there. I don't see it happening at that price point.
Yeah, I don't either. And I hate to be so negative about it, but I think that they're going to have, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I was about to say, I think they're going to have to introduce some sort of an ad supported model, but that would actually surprise me because I know the creator, Dalton Caldwell, is vehemently against it. But it's interesting to see the first month. Again, this is month one. So, hey, in six months, it might be a very different story. If Twitter keeps ticking off all their developers, the developers will continue to make really cool apps for AppNet. And I don't know. We're, again, not to talk about TNT too much on this show, but we do talk about AppNet on TNT all the time. It's kind of a fascinating topic for us because we think, if there's just that killer app that someone creates, you know, some very talented developer or group of them that comes out of AppNet, it could be a game changer. We just haven't seen it yet.
No, exactly. But you know what? I think it's worth trying to find someone from app.net to come on the show because it would be, like you said, it's a fascinating conversation just to try to figure out what they're thinking and how they're planning to move forward. So I will chase that, Sarah. I'll put it on my list of things to do right now.
Please chase
for a guest to come on and talk a little bit more about it, because I'm sure that's not the last time that we're going to hear about it.
Oh, absolutely not. No, that's definitely early stages, not end stages. All right, we've got some more stuff to talk about. We got tips, we got spotlights, we've even got Rad or Fad, but you have to wait till the end of the show for that. But first, let's take a moment to thank Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Leo and I, as recently, were lucky enough to talk to one of the lead technologists over at Ford about some of the future of technology they are working on to put in their vehicles. You know, it's somewhat mind-boggling, not only what Ford is working on, but what Ford is actually soliciting from their social community as far as ideas to make Ford better. So there's a category of apps that are coming to Ford's Sync platform. We've talked about some of these apps in the past. Location-based services. This is stuff that Ford is working on that you're going to be using in Ford cars in the very, very near future. Finding friends, financial service apps. Think of a lane departure warning when you're all the way in the fast lane and all of a sudden you're starting to weave over into the next lane and you're not paying enough attention and your car kind of gives you a beep, you know, or your driver's seat shakes or something. I'm trying to come up with, you know, stuff that wouldn't be too scary. That's the sort of thing that can be extremely helpful, you know, when you're on the road. We got to be paying attention, right? How about lane centering features using onboard cameras, using the cloud for information, services that you've got in your home and your vehicle and your office, and they're all synced via the cloud. I love that. Ford Social is one of the ways not only that Ford is developing, but also Ford is collecting ideas to send to their engineering team. They actually have an engineering team that's willing to listen to all of us who have these really great ideas and just might not be lucky enough to work for Ford and be able to be in those board meetings talking about them. It's really neat. If you go to social.ford.com, you get a sense of some of the topics, not only that have been submitted, but are being voted up and down. You read about a topic, you get, these are actually articles that on our screen now that are from Ford, but there are, which gives you actually a very good sense of what Ford is working on. But there's also a community section where you can submit ideas. And if Amber submits an idea and I say, hey, that's an amazing idea, I really want to see that in my next Ford, I can go ahead and vote that up. I can share that with other folks. I can kind of get the momentum going. And Ford is listening. Ford is absolutely listening to ideas that are viable, that they know that their community wants to see. So it's a really fun place to be. Not only to get a sense of what Ford is working on, but actually to be social and be social, not for no reason, but for to make the cars cooler, right? To make them more technological. That's what we all want. There's also some nostalgic purposes too. I see that they've got the 1966 Bronco up there. You can read a little bit about those old fashioned cars. Leo's so into
love
that.
Those cars.
He loves like looking back in time and oh look at the old Mustangs and there's you know some kind of some trivia and stuff like that. So fun place to go. Social.ford.com. Head on over there and be part of the conversation. And we thank Ford, as always, for regularly sponsoring The Social Hour. We love you guys. All right, let's get into our social tip of the week. And this one is called Statagram.
Statagram, yes. Okay, so we talk a lot about Instagram on the show. Love Instagram, really simple to use, really easy to add filters. I am absolutely obsessed with stats. I love stats. I've always loved stats. I love just getting information and figuring out what's working, what isn't working as far as what I'm sharing. And Statagram does exactly that with your Instagram account. So you can sign up completely for free. You can do a bunch of different things on Statagram. The most interesting to me really are the metrics. So you're able to find out information like how many people have liked certain photos. your top five photos as far as the most liked, the top five people that you like the most as far as how often you like their images, and a bunch of other information. I mean, it gets very granular as far as how far you can dig down into some of your different stats. There are other things as well as far as it gives you information about the best time to post new photos, people that you should perhaps follow. And so if you're into Instagram, and I think this would be particularly useful for people who rely on Instagram, if they are marketers and they want to use it and they want to be able to promote something, they're trying to wrap their heads around what works and what doesn't work, this is a really fun free tool. I signed up. It took maybe a minute or two to pull in my information and to present with me with some stats. And every 24 hours, you can get updates on those stats. So a really simple, fun, and free tool for Instagram lovers.
I am signing in right now. I want to know more about my stats.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, they even have a web viewer, so you can view all of your, you can get a URL. People can view all of your Instagram photos. Just a different way to be able to share Instagram images. But I think the stats, the analytics, that type of information, especially when it gets so specific and it's recommending, you know, when to post photos, what type of photos to post, who you should follow, and that type of information. It's helpful for people coming into a new environment to try to get a handle on how things work.
Yeah, this is cool. It's also just, it's nice to, I was able to pull in my Instagram account really quickly. Sorry, Brian, I don't have my computer set up for you to look at my, to look at my view, but it's okay. I mean, I've got not only some cool statistics, like you mentioned, Amber, but it is nice to have that web view of my account. This is Brian. He's Cranky Hippo, by the way, if anyone wants to start trolling him on Instagram. And he only has two corgi pictures. That's a really cute dog, though. I love that. But it's nice because when I'm on Instagram, I know how to see what my follower count is and who's liked my stuff, and that's all there. But it's nice to have a web interface. Instagram doesn't have that. They now have pretty nice picture permalinks. So if you share an Instagram photo with me on Twitter, I can click in and not only see that photo, but I can comment on it and I can like that from the page. They didn't used to have that functionality, but that's sort of where it ends. I can't actually from that page go to Instagram's homepage and kind of get into my stuff. So
yeah,
this is nice.
It's really nice. And you know what? I mean, one of the reasons that I wanted to recommend it as our social tip for the week is because it's so well designed. I mean, Sarah, it's one of those services you just want to jump right into. It's just a beautiful beautiful display, beautiful layout, and super user-friendly. So again, just fun, gives you information. Like I found out that I guess I like a lot of photos from Anderson Cooper, so maybe I should step back a little bit because it may appear a little stockish, perhaps.
Oh, really? Anderson might not invite you to his next dinner party because you seem a little too eager, for example.
A little too eager. Yeah. So it's good for getting information like that. Maybe you should, you know, branch out and like other people's images. That's all I'm saying.
I think Brian, our TD for this episode of The Social Hour, needs to be a little bit more active on Instagram.
Yeah.
If we've learned anything from the last 5 minutes. All right. Well, here's Anderson. Obviously, he was at the DNC. Boy, he gets a lot of likes. He got almost 7,000 likes on that last picture.
I know.
Picture.
And you know what? There's no point in even liking anything that he likes, even though I keep doing it, because I've never seen anyone with so many likes. And he's posting all the time, even on Twitter, just recently about how much he loves Instagram. And he posts some really great pictures. So he's a huge fan of the service, signed up not that long ago. But his first couple of photos had a big impact and got a lot of people coming back for more, myself included.
This is just, I like the look of this. I think it would be fun to browse more of Mr. Cooper's photos just this way.
On the web, right?
Yeah. It's so
just
nice.
Just bigger. So you're not, you know, sitting down on your tiny little screen on your phone. It's just fun to be able to view them in just a richer environment.
Absolutely. You know, we talked in episode 76 on The Social Hour about Facebook, their purchase of Instagram. Now it's final. It's been approved. All parties are in. And we talked a little bit about, you know, what are we going to see now? What's going to change? Even though Facebook says nothing will change, it's still Instagram, the one that you love. That's what we bought. If I saw something more like this, hey, even if it's, you know, wrapped up in a nice Facebook design, I'd be pretty happy. I'd love to see something like Statagram. Maybe Facebook should buy you Statagram. Maybe they're already trying to.
You never know. Anyway, great service. So that is our tip of the week. And Sarah, for our spotlight of the week, this is also kind of interesting. I had to read this article a couple of times just to figure out how exactly this worked. I stumbled on it when I was reading Mashable, and the headline kind of tells it all. Using Skype, artist creates touching family photos. And so what this particular artist does is that he realizes that more and more there are people who are living far away from their families, and they don't get a chance to get together and have that family image. So what he's done, because he's moved a lot, is he started taking and joining families who are Skyping with families who live far away, and he's actually projecting the video, so the Skype video, onto the wall using a projector, and getting the family members who are Skyping with the people on the screen to go together with the people in the image, and he takes a photo. So it almost becomes like a family photograph. I really hope I didn't confuse anyone. I've confused myself again. But the end result, and we'll put a link on twit.tv, is really kind of fun and kind of interesting. And I think it's a reality for more and more families.
This is so neat. I love this. This is such a good idea. And it's not only, hey, look, it's a family photo that wouldn't have been possible otherwise. But it's really artistic, too.
It is. It's beautiful. Yeah, he gets really artistic. It's so cool. And I just go back to the fact that, one of the things that they talked about in the article on Mashable was just how so many families or so many individuals are using photo services to take pictures of friends who are nearby. But when it comes to families, people are spread out all over the place. I mean, I know it's the same thing with me and my family. And so we really rely on Skype. So the thought of getting this really artistic, creative photo of a Skype family kind of projected, and then you standing nearby in some interesting pose and creating a new family portrait that really defines, I think, the modern day family in the technological era that we live in is definitely, definitely fun. And I've not seen it before either.
And you know, it's really cool too. Okay. We obviously both love this. This shouldn't have been a ratter fad. We're like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But what I love about this is not some Photoshop trick. Which you could do. I mean, I've got family who lives over in Switzerland. I see them very rarely. How could I get into a photo? I could superimpose, a photo that they sent me or something like that. But this is actually, let's get you. We're having a Skype conversation. Okay, now we're going to sit. Yeah, it's just, that's a whole other thing. So it does kind of make you feel a little something because
it's
real. Yeah.
In some ways. I mean, even though the people aren't there, the experience, he's capturing a real experience that millions of families rely on all over the world. So it's just very fun. So that's called Being Together. That's our spotlight.
That's such a great project. I mean, talk about tech bringing people together, being together. If you want to check out more from that project, we will definitely have the link in our show notes at twit.tv/TSH. We got an email from Jim Bednarz, who writes, I'm a big fan of the Social Hour, and I know your emphasis on the show revolves around consumer activity and trends in social media. But I was hoping you could do a segment on the show discussing the importance and value for businesses of having an internet presence with an up-to-date website, as well as active involvement in social media as the IT administrator for a small architectural firm. I'm trying to sell my management on updating our website. We've only had minor content updates over the last 8 years and taking advantage of social media. They have an outdated mindset, and I'm having a difficult time convincing them that this is all very important. I feel you, Jim. Amber and I, we kind of love this question because we get it a lot. I think this is like one of the most common questions that we get on the show is, yeah, social's fun and there's fun tools and you can keep up with people. But in a strictly business sense, how much of it is really essential? Do you want to kick this off?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great question. I get asked this a lot too. And Jim, I think the thing that I would say is you're exactly right. Your website really is your face or your brand on the web. And so many people ignore it. I've had people who've said that they want to go and just use Facebook and they're just going to forget about their website altogether. But as we've talked about on the show, if you watch Facebook evolve and other services, you don't know how they're going to change. You don't have control over your content there. So it is increasingly important to invest time and energy in making your website website, your homepage online, a really great place with content that is easy to update. The good news, I think, about social services, and I know Sarah takes advantage of this as well, is that you can have a really slick website, you can create some new content, but if you're using a lot of different plugins, then that can help to have that appearance on your website that content is changing a lot. So if you have your Instagram, you know, badge, if you have your Twitter feed, that type of information, it makes the website more dynamic. So a combination of creating new content, perhaps, but also relying on these services and the technology that allows you to do that can make for a really rich experience. So yeah, don't ignore your website.
I agree. He says he works for a small architectural firm, and I can't tell you how many times, even if I'm just looking up a phone number for, you know, a restaurant or a company or whatever, I look them up online, you get the website, and if it doesn't seem kind of up to date, it does not even have to be anything that's super slick, but just something that looks sort of modern, like someone's been in there recently, I always have a negative reaction. It's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, if it's a restaurant and they've got really great food, the look of their website is definitely not going to keep them out of the restaurant. But when there's something nice, you go, oh, yeah, this is great. Yeah. You know, it's a pleasant experience, IRL and online, IRL being in real life. And sure, you can have a really, really strong Facebook presence. I think that when you get into the social media aspect of businesses, there's less of a point to spend a lot of time being there if you're not going to be interactive. Mm-hmm. So the interactivity is really important. And I don't think there are so many companies that just don't do this well. And I don't think it's always essential. If you're an architectural firm, well, I mean, are you going to have weekly giveaways or, you know, that kind of stuff works well sometimes, but not for everybody. The rules just aren't the same for every company, just like they're not the same for every person. We all kind of make our social experiences what we want them to be. Amber, the other day I was sitting at a cafe. I was trying to get some work done and I wasn't here at the office and I knew I wasn't going to finish at home, too distracting. So I went to a coffee shop and these two people came in and sat down next to me. And it was obvious that the woman, it was a woman and a man, and the woman was looking for advice in order to build her brand. It doesn't really matter what her industry was because, you know, what if they're watching the show? I don't want them to know I was listening to them. But she's, you know, she's basically saying, yeah, he was an expert to her. And what should she do? You know, should she be on Twitter or, you know, should she be uploading YouTube videos to, you know, so people get to know her or what? And she talked to, but she mentioned something like, yeah, you know, I really want to put together a website. And he said, no. You don't want to do that. You want to build it on Facebook because all the tools are built into Facebook. And that's where you can really grow your brand because the whole thing's social and everybody shares from Facebook. And if you've got a website, then that's just one more place for people to go. And I'm sitting there kind of just like biting my tongue thinking that's not necessarily the right advice. You know, that's not always the answer because if Facebook isn't the place to be in 5 years, she's going to be sorry that she put all her eggs in one basket. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a website that's your own name, you know, or some clever domain that has nothing to do with Facebook at all, as long as if you're going to use both services, you know that, well, you know, you're going to have different places online that you have to manage.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think it's really important to invest in your own site. And I'm glad that we got that question because I think it just helps to explain to people that as much as we talk about social, there are still some old traditional things that you need to do online to maintain a presence and to continue to be relevant. And that would definitely be one of them. Now, Sarah, I don't know if you saw the name of the next segment in the rundown.
I did.
Okay. I like to surprise Sarah every once in a while where I come up with new names for different sections. So I decided to call this campaign spotlight or shame light. And there are so many different social media campaigns. I thought it would be really fun on the show if we talked about campaigns that have done really well and are great ideas, but perhaps also campaigns where maybe people could have thought about them a little bit more and perhaps they have the potential to fail or not do as well as they anticipated. Now, this one is from a company that is doing a campaign locally from Audi, who obviously is a car maker. They came up with this contest, and the idea being that the first 10 people to get 2,500 new followers from the time they sign up to join the contest, they get entered into a kind of a draw, and out of the 10 people, one person has a chance to get keys to a new A4, really nice car from Audi. Now, I was looking through this campaign site. I don't know if you had a chance to go over to the site itself. Has a really cumbersome domain name, and trying to get some more details on the contest, and it was still a little bit vague as far as how it works, but it seems like pretty straightforward. Like I said, first people to get 2,500 new followers will get a key, the first 10 people. And I just think, Sarah, in light of what we've talked about recently with people buying Twitter followers and how quickly you could buy 25 Twitter followers if you really want it to, I'm not sure that this campaign is the best approach.
Yeah, that's a good point. The idea between people buying Twitter followers for not even that much money,
yeah.
Or at least it wasn't last time I checked. I don't really like the idea of you get a certain amount of Twitter followers, or you share this link with a certain amount of your friends, you know, and you get a prize, because that's just encouraging behavior that is not natural. Especially since it is an advertisement, right? I mean, you get a number of Twitter followers, and then you might get a car. Well, I mean, I don't know if they make you say something specific in order to get those Twitter followers, but what you'll probably do is beg people to tell other people about what's going on so you could win this car, and I don't have a car, and that would be just the best thing in the world. And it's like, that it would be great, but most people aren't going to win anything. Mm-hmm. And so you end up just kind of, it's kind of spammy stuff. It encourages spam.
Exactly.
And I never liked that.
It encourages spam. I think it could backfire. And I mean, I'm sure their intentions are good. They thought this was a really clever idea. Get the word out. People start talking about the different campaign. I do think there is a risk, though. Again, like you say, there's a risk that it gets a little spammy. There's a risk that a lot of people end up buying Twitter followers because it has become increasingly easy to do. And then also, I think at the end of the day, I'm not sure that any of this stuff does a lot of good for the brand itself, as far as, you know, there could have been opportunities to create content, to have people doing videos or audio or whatever it might be. And instead, it just is this, you know, it just feels a little hollow as far as the meat of what they're going to get out of the campaign itself and for the brand itself. So, you know, I'm sure they will figure some of the stuff out on their own. But if anyone has a campaign that they see in the social media space, and there are lots of them, that maybe could use a little bit of help or advice or our insight, just let us know, because we could do this as a regular segment.
The shame,
it would be fun.
The shame light.
The campaign spotlight or shame light.
We're going to put spotlight on your shame,
watch
man.
Watch out.
Don't contribute to spam or we'll shame light you. No, that's good. I like that. This is actually something that comes up pretty often. So it probably does have a spot for at least a semi-regular category on the social hour.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, before we get on to Rad or Fad, which I know you're waiting with bated breath for, I want to remind you that there's a few ways that you can get a hold of us and be part of the show. Now, in addition to tweeting or Google Plusing or Facebook message, I guess you can't Facebook message me unless we're already friends. Maybe we are friends. Amber and I, throughout the week, we try to be as receptive as possible to all the great links and ideas that you all send us. You can write us directly at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can also leave us a voicemail, 2626 SOCIAL. That's 2626 social. That's our Google Voice mailbox. And leave us a message. Try to keep it to 30 seconds or less so that we can play it on the show and it can flow nice and smoothly. Or you can always record a video, upload it somewhere, and then email us that link, thesocialhour@twit.tv, as well. Amber, we'll give folks another week or so to be sending in those what was it? Bubbles?
Oh, yes. Let me look that up again. Yeah, the
Bubbly bubbly messages. And then if by next week we're happy with the results, we will build that into the show as well.
Yes.
But without further ado, let's get into, is it Rad or is it just fad?
All right. So I was struck by this headline. I am struck by many headlines because I'm constantly reading the news feeds, like many of the people listening in. This one says Visa Tooth Fairy app helps parents price a lost tooth. And of course, I had to read more about this because it sounded kind of interesting. And I dug into it a little bit. Turns out there is an app that is available that you can get for free. And it allows you to figure out how much money you should leave your child if they lose a tooth. I'm thinking, wow, do we really need an app for this? And then I chuckled to myself because I thought it was kind of ridiculous. And then I went in, I'm just looking at the web version of the app, but I guess it's based on you input things like the state you live in, your parents' age, parents' gender, parents' education, annual household income, and then you calculate how much you should leave your child and how much a lost tooth is worth. I don't know. This just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, I guess. I just thought it was a little bit bizarre. I mean, at first I thought it would be a fun little cute app. And then I see people sharing all of this information. Obviously, this is sponsored by Visa, so maybe there's some benefits to them gathering this information. But I think taking advantage of something kind of fun and light, like how much you should leave your kid for a tooth, I don't know. It had a bit of a little slime factor on my end as far as how I viewed it at first. Also surprised how much kids get for teeth, though, Sarah, I will say.
Well,
that was also surprising.
Yeah. I mean, when I lost a tooth, I got a silver dollar. That was like the cool thing that, you know, my tooth fairy, wink, wink, did for me. I still have all those silver dollars. I think there's like 17 of them or something. But I mean, I thought that was like the more money than I knew what to do with. And now I think kids, I was at a party recently, a bunch of my friends with kids said, oh yeah, they get like $20. I was like, what? That's irresponsible. You can't just give
that's
a kid
crazy.
$20 for losing a tooth or seven. But I guess in certain places, I guess that's the norm. But the thing is that sucks about this is that kids talk to other kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if your parents don't make as much money as Susie's parents, and Susie gets $20 and you get $10, then you're going to feel bad. And it doesn't really matter what the calculator told you to leave your kids. I don't like this either. I don't know what the right number is, but it seems like it's supposed to be fun. Tooth Fairy isn't real. Sorry to spoil it all for you guys.
Sarah, oh my God, Sarah. What are you saying?
There was a moment of non-clarity. I take it all back. She's a wonderful fairy.
This is what happens when we do the show on Friday. Sarah tells all these things that hurt the children, the children who are listening.
Yes. No, fairy is real, okay, kids? Stay in school. Just don't expect $20 under your pillow.
That's ridiculous.
That's crazy. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I guess this app could at least get you in the ballpark.
I don't know. I just, you know what? Like I said, I don't want to be overly critical, although I end up being, even though I say I don't want to be, it's a very Canadian thing. I just think, I feel like this is kind of a silly thing to do. I think that there are plenty of other things that you could do better if you're creating an app. And I think for how much you should leave a child, I mean, you don't really need to think about it all that seriously. And in fact, I don't know, I would have been happy with a quarter if I got that. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure we all need an app. So I say this is kind of fad. I'm not sure that this is going to, you know, get across the point that perhaps the sponsor of the app wants to get across. And great headline, but not sure if it's really all that useful.
Yeah, I say fad too. I say fad. This whole Tooth Fairy thing is one big fad.
The Tooth Fairy, yeah, really.
She's going to be out of the job before you know it. What if you have a really bad kid? What if you're like, well, I can afford $20, but you're getting three?
$20.
$20. You're gonna go
how
broke.
Does that even,
you
how
have
that
kids ripping awesome? Out their teeth. They want $20.
Oh yeah, so
this is not
a lot
good.
Of toothless kids walking around.
I see violence in our future. Okay, we agree. This is a fad. This is just a fad. We don't need
Sarah
app. There's not.
Kidding.
There doesn't need to be an app for that.
Exactly.
Not
this
for
is
that.
A fad. And Sarah was seriously kidding about there being no Tooth Fairy. She was just hurt because perhaps she didn't get the money that she wanted earlier in her life.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yeah. My silver dollars just weren't enough. actually, they were. They were just, they were fine.
Plenty.
They were
plenty.
All right. So, on that note, Amber, we have come to the end of our hour. It's been fun, as always. Remember, to anyone who's not watching us live, or actually to anyone who is watching us live right now, because we're recording at a bit of a strange time. Normal times, Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It's a lot of fun. It's a great, fun social hour. But if you can't join us live, don't worry. You can always keep up with us at twit.tv/TSH. That's where you can find our show, where you can find subscription links, where you can find our show notes in every single episode. You scroll down to the bottom of the page. Jeff Stewart, our wonderful editor, adds all of the links to everything that we talked about so that you can make sure, oh, I loved that one little story. And gosh, I don't remember what part of the show they talked about it in. And I already watched it and I don't remember if it was 15 minutes in. And you get all the links, and that's really, really helpful. For anyone watching us live, this show will be the show that comes out Friday, September 14th. We are recording it 1 week ahead of time. The following week, we go back to normal, at least until the holidays. You know how that is. But hopefully it'll be as seamless as possible. So enjoy your Friday off next week.
I will. You too, Sarah. And hopefully we get lots of feedback from our listeners and viewers and videos and audio messages. Send it all.
Absolutely.
Rad or fat ideas. We are listening.
All of it. Yes. We love it. Thanks so much in advance. And thanks to everybody for watching this episode of The Social Hour. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. And we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.